Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Rick Shields. I'm here with co-host Guy. Nice to have you back, pal.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
Episode 127.
It is.
Apologise, a little bit of a late apology for last week's podcast. We didn't do one. It was Easter weekend. We couldn't quite get one done. However, I feel like today's podcast makes up for it.
Is that your best apology?
In abundance. Well, it's kind of half-hearted.
Grovel more, please.
No, it's half-hearted. I wanted a bloody day off, all right? It was Easter Monday. I was coming in.
I was begging you to do a podcast. I was going, Rick, please, I'll come off my holiday early. Let's get one in the bank, people. You just weren't asked. Terrible.
In today's podcast, we do have a guest.
We do.
And I think it's we've just recorded that section of the podcast. It is a phenomenal story. I'm going to tease it a little bit. If you remember last year, people listening, watching, they would have seen and heard and watched and known about a young Australian golf professional by the name of Minwoo Lee.
Yes.
Now, the video that I did with him at St. Andrews playing in reverse went crazy. He was on the podcast. People loved him. You guys absolutely loved him and followed him ever since. And he even admitted it at the start of this podcast. We're going to hear off him soon. He puts it all down to the fact he was on this podcast.
I think it's nothing to do with practice, dedication, hard work.
Talent.
You come on the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast, you win DP World Tour events. It's that simple.
That's what happens. Well, Minwoo, at the end of last year, was 49th best player in the world, which got him automatic invite to the Masters. So a couple of weeks ago, he played in the Masters and we sit down with him and basically I grill him on every small... Do you think I went too detailed?
No. My worry was you might be like, right, so first thing you had the breakfast, you had your Weetabix for breakfast, right? Then you went for a wee at 9:30, then you went for the putting for 15 minutes, but you were good.
I literally wanted to know...
No,
everything.
You know what was really good about that? There was a couple of things. Firstly, I feel like everyone listening feels like they know Minwoo now from the podcast, from the videos, etc. But I feel like you find that with us in this podcast, same with you, he was really open, really honest, and he wanted to be here. And I think we've got a good thing with him now because I think we'll get him on again. And it'll be like, what's it like to play in the Open at St. Andrews, etc. He was so good. And some of the insights he gave us to the Masters was phenomenal. But not only did he play in his first Masters, not only did he make the cut, he came tied 14th.
And shot the course record for the front nine.
On a Sunday.
So anyway, it's class. He is dialing in from Perth. There's a slight audio issue. His actual microphone's really good, but he was saying he was super hot, and we discovered after it was like a bit of a fan.
Like a desk fan, yeah.
Which now and again just blows into, but it doesn't disturb the audio. So that's going to be coming up in this podcast. Stay tuned.
It's a podcast of two halves, really.
We've got three thirds.
We've got a little third of us at the start and then a big two-thirds of Minwoo Lee.
Yes. How are you, mate? You good?
Yeah.
Enjoy your holiday?
Yes.
You were missed?
Yeah.
That was almost as authentic as my apology. I'm joking. You were missed. There was lots of incredible comments saying, where's Guy? Where's Guy?
Yeah, there was also a lot saying Matt Fry is the best thing since sliced bread. No, Matt stood in. You said to me before I went away, look, I think we should get Matt on because a lot of people might not realise Matt should have got a hat-trick ball. That's his third time on the podcast.
He actually was...
on the second ever episode.
No way.
Which was like November 2019.
There you go.
And that was an audio one. Then he'd won in your garage back in the lockdown days. And now he came on. So in theory, he does deserve a little present.
There you go. I
will get him a nice firm handshake.
You'll get him and never return to the podcast award.
And know what I felt like? So I had a little whinge because I was upset because people were saying how much better he was without me. I get very emotional. And somebody left a comment on Twitter and he said, it's like when you... He said, I'm a school teacher. He said, when I'm away for a day or something, they have to get a supply teacher in. I come back to school and all the kids tell me how much better it was without me. That's how I felt. No, Matt was great. He killed it. And the episode did really well. Obviously, a lot of people were dying to hear your thoughts on the Masters. And obviously, we've not chatted about it too much. Certainly not on the podcast because I've not been here. But it was a great Masters, wasn't it?
It was. It was one of those ones where even though Scottie Scheffler kind of walked away with it in the end, it still had little subplots of drama and all sorts. So, and obviously Tiger and everything else. So I thought it was really good. And if anything, it heats up the fact, I honestly believe, are we in store for possibly one of the most exciting years of tournament golf ever?
I feel like more than ever, there's literally more players up there who you wouldn't be surprised if they won.
Correct.
That's the thing. It's like, there's always obviously, even when Tiger was killing it, you had your VJs, your Ernies, your Retief Goosens, who were doing bits, who were really great players. But now, you look at like the field for the Open, let's just say. If I said to you, Morikawa's going to win again.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Victor Hovland's going to win.
Exactly. Yep, that's fine. Scottie Scheffler wins it. Like, yep. John Rahm, yep. Rory. You could literally go on.
JT, Dustin, Jordan Spieth.
Dustin, exactly.
Just won last weekend.
Dustin Johnson. We literally could go on all day. It is. It's so much competition out there. I think we said this before. It'll come later on when we're speaking to Min Woo about how excited I actually am for the Open now. Yeah. Because I think this year, the 150th, I know we've said this countless times, I'm going to keep saying it, it is going to be special. Tiger is going to be there.
He confirmed it, which is incredible. We have just also locked in our position at the Open.
Yes.
We're going to be there from Monday through till the last pot on Sunday night. And we'll be in the Dunvegan celebrating with Tiger after he just won his Open, doing shots of Sambuca in the eyeball.
The only thing, yes, in the eyeball. The only thing I'm not sure on, though, is the Tiger outfits I've ordered, the actual, like, Tiger striped outfits. You said, like, it's one condition, I can come with you, but I have to dress as a Tiger.
I've got you, like, a Tony the Tiger costume.
It's great.
It's great to be back. I honestly think with everything going on, with all these, this pool of talent, like, who says Minwoo Lee can't win the Open?
He could win the Open.
He won't say he can't. Like, I just think that the depth of field is so bloody strong. That's going to be really exciting. And then...
just a quick one on that, though. What I'm chuffed about is I feel like, and I'm going to hold my hands up a little bit here, I wasn't quite on Scottie Scheffler train. I wasn't against it by any means. I understood he was an awesome golfer. He'd won, was it twice already? Was it two he'd won and he was just killing it? And then obviously the third was the Masters. I feel like now he's actually won a major as well. It almost puts you into that category of like...
No, it's three wins.
And then
Masters.
So he'd won three times. He was obviously killing it. But to win the Masters, I just felt like it put like that... It solidified it. He's going to go down in history now as an amazing golfer.
You kind of thought, and this is, again, not taking any discredit from him because he's won some massive tournaments. Like, he's won the Phoenix Open. He won the Bay Hill tournament at the Arnie tournament at Bay Hill. He won the WGC match play. Like, they are hard events to win. They're not pony tournaments, right?
Yep.
He gets to world number one, but you kind of still think he's kind of not... He's fast-forwarded his way there. Like, he's not cheated his way there, but does he deserve it? Well, he came out and won the Masters by should have been five. It was three in the end. But he won the Masters and was like, yeah, I deserve it.
That's the thing. And now, like, literally... For the rest of his days, he'll be going in his green jacket. I must admit, again, I kind of am slightly team Open over team Masters. Again, we've said that a million times. It doesn't really matter. You don't have to pick one. But I do think when you win the Masters, it feels like it weirdly puts you in a different place. So even winning the Open, Ben Curtis, Todd Hamilton have won the Open. You can't take that away from him. Paul Laurie, he's gone on to do a lot of things in his career. I get that. But when you win the Masters, you're going back every year with that green jacket. It does feel like it puts you into a different stratosphere of almost fame.
Do you weirdly think it is that club on the Wednesday night, like the Wednesday dinner?
Oh, that picture that you get?
Yeah.
I think it is.
Because every single Masters, you see that Champions dinner that they have, and they have this fantastic picture with all the greats. Everyone that's won the Masters that are still alive and kicking and can make that night. Mm-hmm. If you did that with the Open, maybe you would remember some names that we've forgotten about. Like, maybe if you did that and actually put all the Open champions together every year, whatever the venue would be, I do think you'd go, oh, God, it suddenly re-sparked these memories of, like you say, Todd Hamilton winning, Ben Curtis winning. What are they doing now? I'd love to know. Should get them on.
Speaking of the Masters, obviously Augusta National is arguably the most phenomenal golf course in the world. And it was designed by Dr. Alistair McKenzie.
Yes.
This week, well, last week now, people listening, we have gone on the most outrageous adventure ever. Please explain to people listening and watching where we have been, because it was ridiculous.
So a couple of weeks ago, I got an email from a TV show. I won't give it away yet, because it's going to be coming out soon. And this director, this researcher of this TV show said, Rick, watch your videos. I'd love to get you involved in a little project, because through lockdown, in the middle of Wales, I'm going to tell the story of the golf course first.
Okay.
In an area called Rhaeadr, R-H-A-Y-D-E-R, right slap bang in the middle of Wales. In the 1920s, there was a 9-hole golf course built on the side of a hill. And 40 years later, it shut down, mm-hmm. right? And for most golf courses, that would be the end of the story.
Yeah.
They tried to build a golf course. It didn't work. It wasn't financially viable. Whatever it was, it shut down 40 years later. Yeah. However, there's a number of twists in this story. The biggest twist is that the golf course, again, in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of Wales, on the side of a hill, one of the most, if not the most famous golf course designer in the whole of the world that's ever lived, designed that golf course. Now, this gentleman, Dr. Alistair McKenzie, has designed 50, 60-odd golf courses around the world. He's actually from Leeds here in the UK. Some of his biggest golf courses that he's done is like Cypress Point, Royal Melbourne,
yes.
and Augusta National Golf Club. That was in 1934,
Augusta was 1933. You almost forgot Bolton O'Links in 1924.
Well, you know what's the mad one? So I was looking at his list of golf courses designed, and it's staggering. I so wish he was still alive, because I would honestly, I feel like I'd do a 5-hour podcast with him, because how did he design all these golf courses in such a short period of time?
It's ridiculous.
All different places around the globe, when travel was so hard back then in the 1920s, 30s, etc. What I didn't know is, I saw it on the list recently. So the golf course that I kind of semi-knocked about at when I was a junior member, a golf course called Regent's Park in Bolton. It was £25 to be a member there as a junior, right? And when I grew up, I actually collected golf balls off the driving range there when I was through college. I didn't realise that's the golf course he designed exactly after Augusta National, and it's his last golf course he's ever designed.
That is madness.
And it's just like a municipal in Bolton. So anyway, why this particular story was so interesting. So again, this golf course has shut 60 years ago.
Yep.
Through lockdown, there was a very passionate, very enthusiastic golfer by the name of Chris, who wanted to quite simply rediscover this golf course. Like, he remembers it briefly when he was a very, very young boy riding a pony up on this hill. He remembered golf being played there. So over time, over research, he spoke to local residents, old residents. He's used the website. Is it Lost Links?
Lost Golf Links, I think it was called,
which
the
is
website.
A phenomenal website.
I went on
by
it.
The way. How good is it?
It's so cool.
So basically, through trial and error and 1,000 hours of hard work, cutting back the bracken that's on this hill, which is like really thick, kind of gorse,
yeah,
bushes.
It's, weird,
it's not
it?
Nice. Through trial and error, through research, he's managed to find all 9 original greens and all 9/18 original tees.
When you said at the start it's on the side of a hill, I think that is... that's what we thought when we got there, like a bit of a hill. It's honest to God. And we'll put, if you're listening to this, watch the video version on YouTube. I got a couple of videos of you hitting some shots. We'll put a video over this bit now. It's literally like a mountain. You can't believe there was a golf course there. Never mind
until,
an Alistair McKenzie one. Yeah, and then you see it.
You're actually out there and you're actually hitting golf shots and you're starting to see now. And again, don't be under any illusion. This is not a golf course in any regards right now.
Yeah.
Like, it's very rustic. You know, it's this is a one-man band and a bunch of sheep that have maintained this golf course for the last...
The sheep literally do cut the grass?
Literally eat the grass to cut it. But what Chris has done is cut away all the bracken and all the really harsh foliage to open up these tees and you can actually see tees that were designed by Alistair McKenzie. You can see fairways, you can see how holes were played, and you can see the greens. And again, Alistair McKenzie, if you don't know, was kind of famous for
like a tiered green.
Tiered green. And again, we spoke with Minwoo Lee later in this podcast about the really famous ninth hole at Augusta National. Like, that's the perfect McKenzie green where it's like tiered. And anyway, long story short, I actually end up playing pretty much every hole in the golf course with him. Again, the greens aren't, you can't put on them. I actually had to put with like a 3-wood.
Well, that was very clever because the greens are like obviously kind of short, weird grass. So we had a real flag in it. It was like an inner tube, like a bicycle tire, wasn't it? It was a bit weird. About the size of a foot golf hole. So have you ever seen the videos where Rick plays for a foot golf hole? Similar size to that. And basically, once your ball goes over that kind of line, it's classed as within this kind of hole. Which is a great way of doing it, because you couldn't put on them. No. So you were in like little 3-wood bumper runs and drivers. But what was mad, I think on, was it the 8th or 9th hole? I think it was the 8th. We hit some tee shots down. And although it's not a golf course, it kind of felt like a golf course. We're looking for balls, and you suddenly you go from being on a massive hill to being actually on a golf course. It was class.
It was absolutely unbelievable. So massive shout out to Chris. The TV show, well, I'll tell people, it was the one show. That actual segment of the show is going to be out in the end of May, because Chris has got a charity golf day. And again, if you want to play in it, I don't know if there's still spots left, and this is not a paid advert, whatever. I like supporting somebody who's so passionate about golf.
It was
like,
awesome.
And what's crazy, what's a fantastic story, he's had this now rediscovered for the last 2 years. He's played the golf course 4 or 5 times a week for 2 years. So he's played it like 200 times, whatever, in the last 2 years.
No, it was unreal. And I think maybe we might have to head back there one time, do an actual video.
How good was the scenery as well?
Phenomenal.
It really was. So there was 2 things that came out of it for me, is that, you know, it's a shame when golf courses shut down. It's obviously sometimes they're not always financially viable, etc. But the other thing was how unbelievable Dr. Alistair McKenzie is.
Ridiculous.
Like, I almost can't get over it. I almost want to speak to a relative of his. I wonder if he has any grandchildren or great-grandchildren.
He lived in America towards the end of his life, though, so he might be based in the US, but I reckon we could find that. But I think what was mad about that as well, last thing on this, was when you go to like the old course of St. Andrews or whatever, or I'm sure like Prestwick or somewhere where golf was really kind of started, you get the feel of the history, but equally the golf courses now, although they are similar in some ways, are so much more manicured, and even the things to use on them to maintain them. It's not quite like playing a golf course would have been 200 years ago or whatever. But when we were playing that golf course, or you were playing that golf course, I hit a couple of shots. Like, it kind of felt like what golf probably would have been like.
More authentic.
Even longer ago than when that was built, like a few hundred years ago. You know, the greens back when Tom Morris was playing wouldn't be like they are today, obviously. I bet that was a true reflection. Imagine playing there with hickory clubs and little, like, feather balls.
Mad. And the other thing that was quite fascinating, because when we jumped out of the car and I was like, is this for real? Is someone winding us up here? Is this like a you being framed moment? But then actually when we started seeing the golf course, but under the ground it was quite rocky, wasn't it? But some of the rocks almost acted as like natural hazards.
Yeah. There was no bunkers, just rocks.
It was phenomenal.
No, it was awesome.
Really enjoyed it.
Really good. I feel like while I was away, you had an easy time, because you didn't have to answer a Dear Rick.
Okay.
And I know these Dear Ricks are what really get you concentrating and thinking.
Can I be honest?
Go on.
I accessed the podcast email address.
Great.
And didn't realise how long so many of them were.
Yeah, well.
So well done, Guy.
It's okay.
You definitely earn your bread reading all that.
Yeah, we always love the emails. If you want to send an email in, please do email podcast@rickshields.com. Well, annoyingly, we're getting so much spam, not from people, from like random things like, I have a fortune in Nigeria, please be my prince and marry me.
Do you want to be longer?
Yes.
Off the tee.
Yes.
Those type of things.
Yes. I'm actually a bit too long. Off the tee. But by the way, I think I don't know if I mentioned this last time I was here. I can't remember, it's been that long. I'm now part of a club. And it was a little bit embarrassing to join this club. Now I'm part of this club. I don't think I'm ever going to turn back.
The Small Wiener Club.
I'm founder member of that. I am the founder member of that. I am a member of the 7-Wood Society. I own a 7-Wood.
Wow.
You know what? It's a game changer. So I decided to, I've heard there's a bit of a trend now with 7 months. I think even Tommy Fleetwood's had one in the bag. A lot of tour, I mean, tour pros, you can't really go with that.
Trying to make them cool.
Yeah. You can't go with a tour pro has because they have basically every club. They're just putting what they need for certain tournaments, certain courses, etc. Obviously, when people are paying for golf, you're not going to buy a 2-iron, a 3-iron, a 7-wood, a 5-wood, a hybrid, etc., etc. But I got myself a 7-wood. I'm a big fan. It goes the distance of a 3-iron, right?
Yeah.
I can't explain to you how high it goes. It just pops it up. It's so easy to use. But my favourite thing with it is, because there is so much loft on the golf club, you can put a little bit of hands forward, press it down into like a 5-wood and hit a little more bullets out of it.
Mm.
If anyone wants to join me getting a 7-wood, I'll be the leader of this. And I might also start using 9 head covers as well, just well, to be.
Yeah. Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
So that's the same kind of criteria.
You've got enough head covers in the bag.
I have. That's the thing. I've got drive 3-wood and a 7-wood. It's like, it's getting a lot of head covers. But yeah. Anyway, you ready for Dear Rick?
Let's do it.
So Matt, you're going to have to get ready to beep something here. The title is, Dear Rick, I'm shit. Oh, that was live. That was so good.
Well done, Matt.
Matt, that was fire. That was actually really good. That was, normally the beeps go in post-production. That was literally live.
We might actually forgive you for that time you didn't record the podcast.
Yeah.
That was like...
let's not get carried away. This is quite a long email, so I'll try and keep it as short as I can.
Test it again.
It says, Dear Rick, I'm shit. Oh,
it's not bad.
Not bad. So, right, let me just move my laptop a bit so I can get into this. You ready, Rick? Yeah. Eyes closed. You can see this with your fingers on your temples. Okay. Get ready.
Go for it.
It says, Hi, Rick. I've been playing golf for just over a year now. I'm one of the ones who took it up properly after the first lockdown. I played a little bit as a teenager, but that consisted merely of trying to hit the golf ball as far as I could with a crap steel-shafted Dunlop driver with mates at the driving range.
Okay.
15 years on from that, I've been going to the range semi-regular. I started my first 2 or 3 full 18-hole rounds last year with scores in the early 120s. I didn't care about the score at that point. I was just pretty much brand new to the game. That being said, seeing little improvements as the rounds got on. So then I went for 4 or 5 lessons. Okay, quite a common theme there. Since lessons, I've been up to the range and even to local par 3 course. I've seen improvement in distance, accuracy, ball striking, and my swing as well. Great. However, like several other people that have written into the podcast before, the wheels come off at the golf course. I've had one round under 110, and the rest are around similar scores to when I started a year ago, albeit they're getting the course is getting a little bit harder, so he's playing at more challenging courses than he was when he first started. Again, and I'm sure like many others, I don't have the time to be at the range 2 or 3 times a week or to go for much more than one round a month. I've been lucky that I'm using golf bit of clubs. I've got a few other decent bits of kit as well. And most of my clubs in the bag are kind of between 5 and 10 years old. But quite frankly, I feel like I'm starting to pump money into this and not getting any of the rewards. Currently, despite ticking the usual mentioned boxes of practicing as much as I can, as well as getting the golf lessons, I can't see when or where the improvements are going to show. I can go out on par a par 4, but then in the same round, I can get a 10 on a par 3. What's bugging me is golf is like Marmite to me. I'm either obsessed with it or it repulses me. Quite often, after a rubbish round, I can't even bring myself to watch golf videos on Facebook or YouTube because it angers me so much. Do you, Rick, have any advice on how I can keep the love of the sport up despite pumping what I consider a fair amount of money and time in it without getting any more improvement? And how can I stop getting so frustrated and enjoy it more? Thanks in advance.
Wow, that is a good one. Any name or anonymous? Or?
His name is Anonymous.
Okay, so Mr. Anonymous. I think from a lot of everything you're saying, you've done everything you should have done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think the one thing that you should give yourself a little bit of relaxation with is you're so new to the game of golf. Like, 1 year, like, it's not a long time, is it, one year? And I think it's very different. A year playing golf when probably you and me started as a junior to trying to do it when you're a grown-up and you've got grown-up issues. Because that real year is not really a year.
It's like dog years.
Yeah.
A year for a junior golfer is like five or exactly like 7 years for an adult golfer because the amount of time you put into it.
Yeah, like if he's got a family, he's got a job, I'm sure he's got commitments. Like, he can't just be swanning off and playing golf five, six times a week as what, like, say you and me did, and a lot of people who got into golf did when we were younger. So I think he's got to give himself a little bit of relaxation there. It sounds like he's doing all the right things, putting money in the right places, getting the equipment if he needs it, or pumping it into lessons. Here's a really interesting one. I don't know if you know the answer to this. When just casual people go and play golf now, are they always just playing stroke play all the time?
I actually feel like I might be wrong, so please comment below or whatever, or email us. I think most people now play Stableford.
Yeah.
Because I hear people say, I got 36 points in the day, more than I hear somebody say.
I do think so. Do you think, though, people who have played golf for longer than less than a year are playing that?
Very good point. Because he's not mentioned that, has he? He's always put his gross scores.
And when I think about the times where I've maybe unlocked my new potential on the golf course, it's actually when I've not just played stroke play. Mm. It's when I've played match play.
Yeah.
Or like doubles match play. Or there's a situation where you're on a hole and you have to get up and down to halve that hole. And like, it puts you in a slightly different position. It puts you in a position where you're thinking, no, I have to do this, otherwise I'm going to lose this hole.
You know what, as well, that's a great point, because when he said then, he was kind of joking a bit, I think, but I can get a par on a par four. Well, if you would, that might be like three or four Stableford points.
Yeah.
But that 10 on a par three is the same as like a six. Doesn't make a difference in Stableford.
I certainly think for higher handicappers who maybe lack that little bit of consistency early days, playing Stableford, I think, is such an amazing format. Mm. Again, correct me if I'm wrong, and I'd love to hear people's thoughts. I don't feel like it's super popular in America, Stableford.
No, I don't think... I think you're right. Yeah, I don't think it is.
I feel like they play just a lot of either match play, straight-up matches, or stroke play, normal game of golf. So I think looking at other alternative formats that are not just going to mean you have to consistently like write a number down in the box, like as in like a 10 or a 12 if you've had a bad hole. If you've had a bad hole, don't worry, scrap it off, pick your ball up, move on to the next. And I think as a friendlier way to yourself, it's such a nicer format to play, isn't it, really?
I agree.
And certainly if you're a higher handicapper, if you're a brilliant player and you're playing off single figures, you probably want to get stroke play a lot more, because certainly in competition, and this is why a lot of club competitions now do favour stroke play a lot, Stableford a lot more, and they have maybe a monthly medal, that just you showed, didn't it, 1 month, a year they play a medal,
yeah,
because it does probably favour the slightly better players.
It's grueling, isn't it? Medal or stroke play, because anybody can have a bad hole, and if you're a scratch golfer, you can get a six or a seven or an eight. Yeah. Sometimes things happen, don't they? And it's just like there's nothing worse than playing a medal tournament or stroke play, whatever you want to call it, and you get onto the first hole, and for whatever reason you get like a treble or a quadruple bogey, and you're like, that's my round, pretty much done.
So these are my tips for him, Anonymous. I don't think he's doing anything wrong the time off the golf course, but when he's on the golf course, try three different new formats. Stableford, if he's not done it before, away when you get net par, you make 2 points, net birdie, you make 3 points, and if you have anything over a net bogey, it's just nothing. Yep. It's fine. It's a great format. You can play match play against other people. Yep. I do think that's a really, really good... Like, I remember when I was kind of growing up and wanting to get better at golf, I'd force myself to play match play because I feel like it'd really benefit my stroke play scores like the week after. Because you're just a bit more adventurous. It's a bit braver format, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
Like, you never feel like you're out of it with match play massively.
And it's also just another way of play. There's nothing worse than just playing one type of golf every time you go and play. It's nice to mix it up.
If he plays on his own, the other way you can do it is bogey golf. Yes. So match play against the golf course. Again, because I'm not a member of a golf club, I don't know if that format's really popular.
Very,
still.
I think that's because it's very rare. Because I'm sure I've not played it for years. But say if you got like an eagle, let's just say, you only basically still go one up against the course, don't you? On the flip side, if you get a treble bogey, you only get lose the hole.
That's similar to match play.
Oh yeah, exactly. You're literally playing match play against a golf course.
So how you play that is if you have a net par, the hole is halved. If anything better than net par, you go one up in the match. Yeah. Anything worse than a net par, you lose the hole. Yeah. So it's like match play, but against the course. And I honestly believe if you played these different formats and it would definitely benefit in the long run your actual stroke play score, and he'll find himself shooting under 100 pretty easily and having more fun with it.
That's really good advice.
Thank you. That felt quite sophisticated and it grown did. Up.
I feel like we should have like a sub podcast where we can have like relationship questions and you can just sit there and talk to them, because I think that was really beneficial.
It's because I got bumped on the head.
Now, you told me you had a story which I don't know yet. So you said you told me, I've got a story that I want to save for the podcast. And I begged you and pleaded you, said, just tell me, go on, just tell me. And you wouldn't.
It might not be that exciting. Last story, then we'll come on to Minwoo Lee. Right.
I've got one more thing after that, don't let me forget.
When you were away, I decided to take the kids. It was Easter Saturday. I thought, I'm going to take the kids, get the kids out of the house. Oh, no, it was Easter Friday, Good Friday. It wasn't so good for me.
Okay.
Dun, dun, dun.
Intrigued.
We were going out to friends. My wife wanted to get ready. The three kids were off school. I was off work, whatever. So I took them to the driving range.
Nice.
Okay. Thought, if I can't work, I might as well pretend I'm working and go to a driving range. So I took the three kids, dead excited, blah, blah, blah. So it was really busy at Trafford. And I'm not a queuer guy.
You won't queue at Trafford.
I don't queue. So I barge in.
Of course you
do. I pretend I know people. I could see, don't worry. Yeah, I'm just going to go straight in. So I go in with the three kids, speak to the boss. He says, go in the teaching bay.
VIP bay.
Yeah, don't go in these riffraff bays.
Yeah, of course.
Go in the teaching bay, yeah. Okay? So it's quite exciting for me, because that's where I kind of started making
videos.
What's
weird, though, is that not only do you that, but you then just walk through the American office, grab golf clubs to use. You don't take your own clubs, you just start pulling them off the shelf. I'll have a Stealth, I'll have a Pink.
I'll have that. Thank you very much.
And then you start hitting Pro V1s down the range. It's just weird.
I maybe should change my habits on that. So I'm in the teaching bay, and I'm with the three kids, and what I normally do when I'm at the driving range with the kids, certainly for sharing a bay, we'll take turns. So two of the kids sit at the back, one of the kids hitting, and we hit five shots each and swap round.
Yeah,
everything was going brilliantly.
I've witnessed that, and it works.
Everything was going swimmingly, right? I was in my old bay. I felt like a golf coach again. I was like, here we are. I'm like teaching. This is exciting. I couldn't. My login didn't work anymore on the computer, though. I know. I wanted to see if I had any emails or anything.
What did the kids say when you started talking about angle of attack and smash factor? They enjoyed that or not?
When I sat them all down and went, watch me, kids. Do it like this. Do it like this. And they're like, Dad, your grip's so weak. Why'd you open the
Why'd you fan the face so much?
What's with the really flippy hand action through the ball? Oh, don't show us chipping, Dad. Bloody hell. I'd rather watch Pete Finch for that. So anyway, I had all the kids go in. There was a couple of other teaching pros in there. The kids were being quiet and very, very well behaved.
Okay.
Like, these are doing really well. I'm thinking, I'm going to treat these kids to an ice cream. Like they're blitzing it. They're blitzing life. Hitting some nice shots. Loving life, right? Until the moment.
Come on.
So I've taught for nearly 10 years and taught kids of loads of different ages. Loads of adults, loads of beginners. There's one thing that's, I know it's happened to a lot of other golf pros, but it's never happened to me. Been hit or hurt by a student.
It punched. Your lessons are shit.
Like, this isn't working. I'm going to chin you. So I've never had that happen. I've seen it happen. It's a common thing. You're wielding metal.
Like shanky ones or something, hit
just
them
clubs.
Or. Oh,
like,
right.
Like,
wow.
People like, swing clubs when they're supposed to.
Okay.
There's some great ones on Instagram where, you know, like you're like a coach and you're like showing a student about where to swing or how to hit it. And then suddenly there's like new golfer kind of goes, all right, but the pro is like there still.
Yeah.
And the student just swings and whacks the coach. So I've never been hit. So at the time, my little boy is on the mat and I've not disowned him yet, but it's getting close. So I'm putting, to speed the process up a little bit, For my little boy, I was putting the ball on the tee for him.
Okay.
So I put his ball on the tee, whacky shot. Put the ball on the tee, whacky shot, right? on maybe the third or fourth shot and put the ball on the tee. And to next, he turned round with the golf club, quite accidentally, innocently, lifts the club up, and it absolutely clonks me in the head.
Oh, my God.
Like, right between the eyes. Like, literally the eyes. I'm like stunned. I'm, like, taken aback. I'm thinking, oh, that really hurt. Like, that really hurt. I instantly touch my head, and no word of a lie, guy. I'll show you the picture. There was a bump on the side of my head that was absolutely massive.
Oh, my day. Did you scream?
Like a full golf ball lump on my head.
Oh, my God.
If you want to see that picture, I might share it on Instagram. If not, we'll put it on the YouTube video. Instantly, I'm thinking, oh, my God. Now, luckily, it didn't bleed, right? But I'm thinking, but then actually, some research, I think it might have been better if it did bleed, because I feel like that was
all like the blood.
Yeah, I feel like it was blood behind the skin. So I'm thinking, what the hell do I do?
Did you scream, though, or what did you do?
I just went, oh, because there was other coaches there and stuff. If I was at home, I'd have absolutely roasted him. I'd have said, how dare you?
I mean, he's 15. He should know better.
He's only 3. So I go over to the mirror. I'm looking at the mirror thinking, what do I do here? And bless him, he was like, his little eyes were like going. I was like, it wasn't really his fault, but he did attack me with a golf club, which I'll remember for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So we hit the rest of the shots because the girls wanted to hit the shots. I'm thinking, what am I going to do here? The driving range is absolutely packed.
Yeah, Good Friday. Everyone's off work.
Packed. And I'm thinking, on my walk up here, and it's lovely, fans of the channel stopped me, wanted a quick chat, wanted a picture, whatever else. I'm thinking, this is going to be mayhem. I've got this massive lump. So I'll get my hat and I'll lower it as far over my eyes as I possibly can.
Cover it then?
Not really. It didn't feel like it did to me. It felt like I'd had this.
Was it pulsing as well?
Yeah, it was really hurt. It was really hurting. So I'm thinking I need to get ice on it because it needs to go down. So I say bye to the golf coaches, but I'm not even looking them in the eye. I'm like, yeah, see you, lads. See you, lads. I'm off, right? So I come out. Literally, I come out the teaching bay. A lad spots me. Oh, Rick, watch all your videos. I'm thinking, oh, no, not now. Please, not now. I said, oh, thanks, pal. Really. Literally, my hat is like over my nose at this point. I don't even know. I don't even know how he recognized me. He must have just seen a beard and a peak of a hat. That's all he could see.
So you're trying to get out here as quick as possible?
I just wanted to get out. I just needed to leave that space. I'm like, getting the kids.
Was it more the fact you had a massive bump on your head or the fact you had to say that your son hit you with a golf club that was embarrassing?
It was a bit of both, really. Yeah, it was a bit of both. And instantly, honestly, I thought to myself, no way I'm telling this on the podcast. There's no way I'm telling this story on the podcast.
Was that one of your first thoughts?
I'm so embarrassed.
Was that within the first 5 minutes you thought that?
Yeah. And then I thought also, right, I hope nobody's going to see me because then they're going to say, what about that massive bump on your head on the podcast? So anyway, I managed to navigate my way down to the little cafe, went to the cafe, asked the woman behind, can I have an ice pack? And at this point, I like lifted my head up and her eyes bulge, like, oh my goodness.
There's
like
a unicorn here.
So she runs in the back, like, emergency. I'm surprised you didn't pull, like, the emergency call.
Everyone stops in balls and looks at you.
air ambulance flies down onto the driving range. Local golf pro and YouTuber shuts down driving
range.
We've
had a 250cc driver to the head.
So she gets me a little ice pack, like one of these breakup ones. I'm putting it on my head. I'm thinking, God, how am I going to get this?
That was quite bold that you actually went to the cafe in the first place.
I think
place,
I needed
though.
To because I knew, because I was going out with friends that afternoon, right?
Ah, you're thinking damage limitation. Ice it.
Well, I'm speaking to my wife going, I'm not going. No, I'm not going.
That's so funny.
I'm not going tonight. I've got this bloody massive lump on my head. No, I'm not going. So I got this ice pack, put it on. And as I'm walking out, and I'd like to apologize to one particular individual, and I've never done this in my whole life ever. As I was coming out of the cafe, this fella had spotted me going in, and he kind of hung around till I came back out. He's a fan of the channel, fan of the podcast. Thank you, whoever you were. Thank you so much. And he came and said, Rick, love your videos. Can I get a picture? Now, normally, with a bit of a fee involved, yeah, I'll say yes.
50p it is.
50p a picture.
I remember you were 25 back in the day.
I'll say yes, you can have a picture, sir. Just please call me Lord Shields. And you can
do not touch me.
Don't look at me directly in the eye. And I need to vet every picture you take. Yes. Jokes, by the way. So, jokes.
Yes.
So he came, he walked the pitch, and I was like, oh, I really can't have a
didn't say
now.
No.
Like, I said no.
Oh.
I said, I'm really sorry. And he was the only guy, because I thought if he asked, it was a really,
oh, did you
know, near the reception?
Yes.
Near the reception bit. If he asked,
oh, there'd be like, loads of women coming over, swarming.
You know,
it'd
have been like One
signing.
Direction, direction, you know, and I'm not here for that.
No.
I'm there for a quiet day at the Trafford Centre.
It's the fact that you walk into Trafford Centre Rangers with a hat that says, I am Rich Shields on it. You're going to get it. If you're wearing that hat that says, yes, it's me. It's... And then the fact that you were your United top with Shields number one on the back, then you're going to get stopped.
Yeah, and I'm going, hi guys, welcome down to Trafford Golf Centre.
Hi kids, welcome back to Trafford Golf Centre.
Thanks for watching, like and subscribe. But yeah, no, at that point I thought if somebody potentially spot, it was really busy, I thought this is not going to be the only picture. So I kind of lifted my peak of my hat up, and again, eyes like...
Have you got a bit of a bruise now, still?
Yeah.
Oh my word, I can see it in the light.
So, because I've worn a hat over my eyes for the last 5 days. So I come out, and like it's massive. So I had to say no to him. I come out and I come down these stairs, and the queue up the stairs are huge. So very different scenario to when I was walking up the stairs, skipping VIP lane. Yeah. It. I'm now walking down the stairs like a little lost puppy.
Well, what's weird is people often see you walking out of Trafford Golf Centre in tears because I beat you at long drive, but it's very rare to see you in tears with a massive bum on your head.
So, yeah. So anyway, long story short, I was true to my word. I did buy the kids ice cream still.
Yeah.
And as they sat on the steps where... near the end of the driving range, I sat in my car feeling sorry for myself with this ice pack on my head. And luckily, I got there quick enough. I got home, put peas on it, ice bag of peas. Luckily, that evening, we'd been at the party for an hour and a half and nobody said anything. So I kind of brought it up. I said, has no one but seen this massive lump on my head? But I think it was just a lot bigger in my mind than it actually was.
Yeah.
That's the story.
What a fall from grace.
So I've never taken that little... sod again.
No,
I'm joking.
Well, it was good.
It was my fault.
I could. That was such a good storytelling. I was there with you. But one last thing before we come on to this amazing podcast with Min Woo is that this is Tuesday. This is going to be out in 3 days' time. So Friday, Break 75 Season 2 is back.
Drum roll, please, Matt.
Oh, for Christ's sake! Oh, that was quite good. It was a perfect time then. That was really clever. I don't know. I think that's just a fluke.
No, because you just literally got guys.
I said
beeped.
Christ. It wasn't the worst word in the world. It's not really a swear word. We beeped it. Anyway, yes.
Yeah, Break 75 is back. 29th of April, 4 p.m. Yeah?
Yeah.
I thought you were checking the date then.
No, I was checking the date, but yeah, you're right.
Four. Many, many weeks. We've not come up with how many I'm going to do yet until golf destroys me. I'm actually going to play stable. I'm going to play stable for this year.
Can you get 36 points? That'll be actually quite good.
Yeah, so the first one is up in Scotland. I won't give it away. It's already been filmed. In fact, we filmed a couple already in advance. They're going to be coming out every Friday, 4 p.m. And they are bigger, they are better, and they are even...
Bigger scores.
More. Oh, you didn't get me, Matt. than ever before.
No, you know what? Jokes aside, the first episode is obviously fully edited and ready to go. And I'm not just saying this, it's one of my favourites. I think last year had a great reception, which we were very, very thankful for. Cause it was great people seeing you on the golf course, having a laugh, showing good shots, showing bad shots. Again, both of which happened in the episode so far. That is golf. And I think one of the very intro of the first episode, without spoiling anything, you kind of say this line to camera where, you know, like, I want to break 75 because I don't claim to be the best golfer in the world. And it's very real. And I think that's what people will really like with this series. And the golf courses you've got planned as well. I am excited.
Some crackers. And you join me for the first two episodes.
Yes.
And there's a couple of episodes you definitely want to join
100%
me on.
I want to join you on a couple of them.
So yeah, exciting times. Right. From me trying to break 75... around all the different random golf courses in the UK, to this interview now with the 49th best player in the world, who has just shot 30 for the front nine at Augusta National on a Sunday.
Bad.
Min Woo Lee, honestly, this chat, it's about an hour long. It's absolutely brilliant.
Yes.
It's brilliant. I think you're going to really enjoy it. Again, apologise a little bit about the fan noise, but nothing much we can do. Sit back, enjoy. And we'll definitely have him on again near the Open.
Love to.
Guy, great to have you back.
Thanks.
And we'll see everyone. next week.
See you soon, guys.
Live from Australia, Minwoo Lee. Min, thank you for coming back on. I feel...
Yeah, I know.
I feel a lot's changed since back in... Was it June last year or May last year?
It was end of May, I think it was.
I feel like your whole life has flipped around and you are just a baller. Like, you are just balling it now.
Yeah, obviously things have been pretty good since after the podcast and the video we've done. There's a lot of hard work, but there might be a little good juju from you. So thanks very much to the Rick Shields podcast and the fans out there. It's been awesome. Obviously played very good at the Scottish Open and won. That was probably the biggest highlight. And then I just played the Masters, which was another, big step forward. And no, it was an unbelievable experience. And happy with the way golf has gone since then.
You're just living the dream, aren't you, right now? Like, you're still 23-year-old.
Yeah, 23.
23, traveling the world. You've already won on tour. You've just played in the Masters. You've just, by the way, tied the front nine course record at the Masters on a Sunday. Are you kidding me? What the hell?
I know. Obviously, I was a little disappointed of my back nine because the front nine was going so well, and I think it crept into the top five after the ninth hole, and it came really quick. I was just feeling it, made a lot of birdies, hit it good shots, some good breaks, and capitalized. And then at the end of the round, I was a bit disappointed that it finished that way, but then you got to just think of the positives, and because that was probably the only kind of downfall I had, four bogeys in a row, but they were actually really good bogeys. I'll take those bogeys. It could have been a lot worse, but it was an amazing experience, and it just happened so quick. I am pretty proud of that front nine record because it was my first time, and a lot of other people have played there plenty of times, so it was an amazing achievement, I guess.
It was ridiculous. Right, I really want to rewind time a little bit, okay, because I want to come on to this story of obviously Sunday and everything else. Can you first tell me when you received the invite? Because you got in, you had to be in the top 50 in the world to get in, didn't you? And you were 49th in the world at the end of last year.
Yeah, so I, after the last tournament of the year in Abu Dhabi, I came, I want to say 16th there, and I knew I needed to play decent there to get into the top 50, but it was only, I came fourth the week before, so there was no talk about top 50 talk, nothing about that. And after the fourth, I'm like, people started saying, hey, one good tournament, you can get into the Masters, and being that top 50 at the end of the year. So I was like, oh, okay. I mean, that kind of put a little bit of pressure on myself because, I was just vibing out there and just playing really good golf, which I enjoyed. I didn't have any pressures, and I just, was hitting it so well. So I was just enjoying it. But I didn't putt that well at the very end of the year at that tournament. And, it was actually a cool story. On the last hole, I smoked my drive, waved my hands up in the air. And I'm like, oh my God, this is the last shot, last drive of the year, and I was so excited to just be off the course because I played 2 weeks in a row, and maybe three, and I was just like, so get ready to go home and quarantine, which was not exciting, but I was excited to get home. So I've smoked this drive, and I have a 7-iron into the last hole, and if people know, it's a pretty difficult par 5 over water, and I've blocked this 7-iron so far right, worst shot of the week, into the bunker, and I managed to hit it to, a foot and then hold it. But the funny story was my caddy at the time, Bill, he was saying to my playing partners, Jason Scrivener and his caddy Rance, like, if he doesn't make birdie, we're not going to get into the top 50. So at the end of it, Jason, like after we shake our hand, Jason goes, I think you just made it in the top 50. Good job. Here's the
no
nice birdie. And hopefully you get it. So then a couple of weeks later, which was probably maybe mid-December, I didn't play a tournament. There was a South African event and I could have played those tournaments if I didn't get into the top 50. But there's a guru guy on Twitter, and he knows all the calculations on the rankings and all that. So he said that I should be in the top 50. I was 49th, 50th. So, I mean, if I didn't make birdie on the last hole, it would have been a kick in the teeth, because, I mean, I hit it unbelievable that week and just putted so bad. So I was like, oh, I just had to make one more putt or something like that. So it was a really cool, I guess it was just a good achievement. And then I got the letter. I didn't actually get the letter. My letter came to my manager in America. So when I got to America, maybe January, February, I got to see the actual card, which was really sick. But yeah, we knew a couple of weeks before the end of the year.
Explain to people listening and watching, because it normally happens towards the end of the year or early this year, you get the invite through the post. Explain to everyone kind of how that looks like. It's quite subtle, isn't it?
Yeah, so I mean, you get top 50. I mean, in America, I'm sure postage is real quick, but I live, you know, on the other side of the world. So, especially, and then with COVID happening, so I knew, I think I left on the 4th of January to another tournament in Australia. So I wasn't going to be home. So I think my manager did the right thing and said, oh, it's going to come over to his house in Florida. But I was, you know, the people that are already in got their letters. So I was like, oh my God, I'm going to get my letter soon. But I mean, it came to the 2nd to 3rd January and I was like, well, my letter's not here. So I think they had to make sure that I was actually top 50 by, you know, some people knew already like me, but you know, the tournament's not going to give out a letter and you end up being 51, you know, that looks not good for them. So, I was just, you know, I got it and it was sick. It was just like this little envelope comes out with like, I'm sure they, I don't know if they write it or it's printed, but it looks so written, but so professionally. Yeah, literally perfect with, you know, it doesn't say 2020, it doesn't say 2022. It's all in letters and it looks sick. So, yeah, I'm going to frame that one and keep it.
That's incredible. So do you have to almost accept the invite or is it a given? Like, do you have to actually message someone back or email somebody?
Yeah, so you get like a link and you pretty much just click yes. So it's weird. It's like, obviously you're going to play, but it's just I think it's just an official thing. You just get it. So and get the link and you just press yes.
So you're in, you're playing in the Masters. Obviously you've got 2 or 3 months to prepare. I don't want to get kind of too geeky. Did you change much in your preparation or did you just keep, as you mentioned, just keep vibing? Did you just think, you know the golf course, surely, because obviously you've seen it so many times on TV. Like, did you do anything really different in the build-up to the Masters?
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure you get to go to the Augusta as many times as you want beforehand.
Wow.
So I got to go, there was a week off, so I went, I flew down in the morning, played the afternoon, played the morning the next day, and then flew back to Orlando. So I got to play twice beforehand, and obviously that's different to a normal tournament. You don't really practice round before the week. So, it's one of the courses where you need to practice or else it's, you know, you're going to be way behind because slopes, everything around, you just need to get ready for that course.
Wow.
So, just a quick one, touching on the slopes. Obviously, you've played clearly at Augusta and Rick's been to watch the golf. Everybody says how slopey it is now, hilly, but on TV, you can't really see it. How slopey actually is it, Minwoo?
It's just, I don't know, like it's so slopey. I can't explain it. There's a lot of holes that are down and up and, you know, the 10th hole goes straight down, right to left. You can hit a snap hook off the tee and actually be fine. There are a lot of hills. You know, I think I finished my Saturday round early. I was second group off and I had lunch and I was watching it on TV and I'm like, it looks so different on TV. It looks like a flat chip, but it's not. It's, you know, you got to like literally place it on the dime and then let it just trickle down the slope. So it's completely different to what people see. But it is an awesome experience because there's some holes that are just on the fairway, and it, like the ninth hole is just grass and it's just one green on the just middle of nowhere. So it's pretty cool.
Would you say it's the hardest course you've played?
Hardest? I think Bay Hill this year was unbelievably hard. It was, I think Scotty shot 5 under or something, but I mean, the grass was a foot deep and the greens were so firm. Like I was just not ready for it. Just Monday, Tuesday practice round was kind of soft and it was okay. And then you get into tournament and your putter doesn't even sit on the ground. It slides when you, cause it's so burnt out.
The greens were so fast.
It was a really big surprise to me. And these courses are tough out here.
So when you very first played it, so this was a couple of weeks before the actual Masters, like did you go on your own? Did you go with? I'm guessing you can't just take anybody with you, can you?
So if you play with a member, you can bring, you know, 3 other people in the group. So a lot of people bring, like, play with a member and bring their dad or bring their family.
And
we didn't have a member, so you could use a professional caddy from Augusta. So I play with myself and Lucas Herbert. And he had, you know, we both had our own Augusta caddies, and you're allowed to bring 1 guest. So my coach was with me at the time and he came over and, you know, we got to see the course together.
And when you played for the first time, did you actually go out for score or was it a bit of a knockabout?
It was a knockabout because there's a lot of, most of the holes you got to play to, you know, the left side of the green or the right side of the green because that's a Sunday pin or that's a Saturday pin. So you had to mix it up. You can't just play there because it's literally like you just got to know your slopes. I mean, I had a caddy, Brian, out there, and he just gave me so much information. I had to write everything down because I couldn't put it all into my head. It was literally, you cannot miss it here or else you're going to 3-putt, or you can't make an up and down because it's so fast. And some chips and some holes out there are just impossible to make up and down. So you just need to know.
And did you have to, I'm guessing you had to relay that then all back to your actual caddy for tournament week as well?
Yeah, exactly. I got a new caddy and he's been there a couple of times. So he kind of knew.
It wasn't his first time.
Hmm?
It wasn't his first time. It wasn't your new caddy's first time, was it?
Yeah, no. He's been there a couple of times. So he knew around. But, you know, after you go there, like, once or twice, you know, kind of the gist of it and you kind of know.
You've got the hang of it.
Yeah.
So let's now fast forward a little bit of time. It's Masters week. Like what day did you arrive? Are you there like super early? Because obviously the tournament starts on Thursday. Did you play in the par three?
I played the par three. My sister caddied.
I'll come on to that in a minute. Let me save that. So when did you actually arrive? What was the first day you actually
got? I arrived on Sunday night at like 11 o'clock because we had a plane from Valero, Texas open and we came over. So that was that night. And then we just went out early on Monday.
And let's say that Monday, practice round, you're getting a bit of practicing. Who's that, Mike? Is that yours? What's your?
Is that mine? Sorry. Wait, give me a second. I was feeling cold. Now I'm like real hot.
I'm still getting some. That's good. What were your honest expectation levels? So on that Monday, Masters tournament week. What were your goals and expectations?
I mean, I got so many interviews and I just said, I'm going to have fun. People put so much pressure on themselves. I play with Scotty in the practice round and they all say, just go out and play. There's so many people go out there the first time and say, oh, you need to do this, you need to do that. But you just go out there and play. I mean, who cares if you you're going to hit, you're going to have bad shots, you're going to have bad putts. It's the Masters, you know, it's, there's literally the most people I've ever seen on a golf course, and you know, you're going to be nervous. So, you know, you literally just have to go out there and play golf.
Love it.
You know what? This is an obvious thing to say, but every year the Masters comes around, it actually makes you realize how big of an event it actually is. The coverage it gets over here, all my friends were kind of very casual golfers are watching it, texting me saying who should have bet on. It really does like get people excited, doesn't it? And it's that thing, it's the first major of the year, the first massive, massive tournament for the casuals. You must feel there's a lot of eyeballs on you.
And I think the casual, because it's at the same venue every time,
they can
easily get infested with it a little bit more as well, because they've seen Augusta for many years.
Exactly.
It is such a huge event.
Yeah, it's just so fun. I think if I had to choose an event to win or a major to win, I think I'll say the Masters, but I mean, any major would be fine, but... for me growing up, it was the Masters. Playing in Europe a bit more, I've kind of sided towards the Open, but my gut feeling is the Masters. You know, that's the biggest, you know, you want that green jacket and you work hard to get there.
Of course. So Wednesday, and by the way, I 100% think you will, without question. The golf you showed on Sunday morning was just a joke. Wednesday, you're playing in the par 3 tournament. Was that the first time you played the par 3 course, or did you play that beforehand?
No, first time. So it's so cool. I mean, I did not know anything about this course. The longest club I took was an 8-iron. Everyone said that. I didn't hit the 8-iron. I think I hit 9-iron maybe, but it was usually wedge or under. And, I mean, these greens, it was kind of not bad, but the greens were real slow because they're so slopey. I mean, you're spinning. You've seen it. Everyone has seen it. You hit it 20 feet past and it comes back all the way down. You know, what course does that? So it's real slopey. The greens are not as fast or not fast at all because of that reason. So you don't want to putt too much and put too much consideration, because the next day you're putting on glass. So. You just have to play. You just get it, you know, you just have to do it. It's your first year doing it. I mean, I play with Mackenzie Hughes. He had his kids out. It was so cute, you know, every hole he would hole like a one footer and everyone would go crazy, you know. But it would be a special experience, you know, if you had people with you. But it's so special. I mean, there was so many people and like 2 meters off the green and there's people and you're like,
what?
You got to hit good wedge shots or else you're hitting someone.
Well, who was it that hit one into the crowd? And it might have even been like Scottie Scheffler. Somebody hit one and then the actual guy in the crowd caught and just threw it onto the green.
Yeah, and nearly held it.
Yeah, exactly. They literally sat so close.
I nearly held it.
Yeah. I think I saw a stat, Minwoo, that you were the first person ever whose caddy had a higher world ranking than the player.
Yeah, probably. I mean,
that was so cool.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, obviously. Minji was on the bag, and my sister, and no, it was a very cool experience. I don't know if she liked the caddying part for her brother, but she liked the experience. There was a lot of people, and she got to hit two shots, hole 8 and hole 9, and she, I mean, hole 8, she hit it to 10 feet with like a 9-iron, and then she hit it pretty close on 9-2. So I mean, it was a very cool experience.
Oh, that's amazing. And was she absolutely odds on that she was going to caddy for you? Like, had she reserved this for many years beforehand?
No,
or did you ask
no,
her?
No, actually, mum was supposed to caddy for me. Well, she wanted to caddy for me. She's like, as soon as I got in, and then closer to the date, Minji's like, no, I'm going to caddy. So she took the throne.
Did your mum walk around?
Mum and dad walked around. Yeah. Mum and dad walked around. So the whole family was out there, which was really cool. It's like my first time having both parents out at a golf tournament since I've turned pro. So wow. It was a very special experience.
That's amazing.
It is what we talk a lot about, the Open or the Masters, which is better. And they're both so, so different, aren't they, for different reasons. And I can't wait this year for the 150th at St. Andrews. But you have to say, when you see the players with the families at that par 3 in particular, it does feel special. Like Tommy with his little boy Frankie and the pictures they got and stuff, it just looked awesome for the families and friends.
Yeah, I mean, no other tournament does it, and it's just such a special tradition, I guess. And, you know, you have your family out and it's even more special. And there's just so many, there's literally, it's full. Like the whole par three course is full. So it's just an awesome experience.
I must admit, I went in 2018 to the Masters and I went on the Sunday and it was amazing atmosphere, unbelievable. Got to see Tiger hitting and just, as you mentioned, saw that slope on 10 down the hill, saw so many things that you just do not see on TV. But I also so wish I'd gone on like the Wednesday, because I do really think the Wednesday is one of the best days for a spectator, because you still get a bit of practice. I mean, I'm guessing players are still playing the real course in practice rounds as well, aren't they? But then you've got the par three tournament, you can still take your phone, you can still take pictures and videos, like, where on the tournament days, obviously,
that's
not allowed. Oh, you can't do phones on Wednesday.
No. Only players can have phones on grounds, but you can bring your camera and your videography camera.
So phones aren't even allowed on the Monday, Tuesday?
No. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, only cameras. And then after tournament days, no cameras, nothing.
Ah, but you're
except the players.
Players are allowed. Nice,
yeah.
Nice.
But I mean, yeah, we still get told that we're not allowed to. We shouldn't have it out in public. But when we're like at our cars or something and in a private area, we can.
Do you get quite a detailed list of do's and don'ts?
Those are probably the main thing. You know, I think the spectators can't run. They can't, you know, shout or else they're kicked out. And they're pretty strict. I've heard from the players, they have been pretty strict. And if you do something wrong, you're out. So, I guess that's why Augusta is so good, because it's very polite, and obviously the Open, they have such polite crowds and respectful, and they know golf really well. And I mean, same as the Masters, it's just a really cool, I think any golfer or any human that likes golf has to go there.
So
if they can find a ticket.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. That's not the easy bit. So Thursday, what time did you tee off on the first day? Was it morning time?
It was mid morning. So, like my coach has been there before 8 years ago, and he was like, make sure you just, hopefully you're not near Tiger, because it's a joke. It's literally a joke. It's eight people deep and you just can't move around.
Did you see any of the Tiger mania?
I mean, I was actually fortunate enough to, you know, I was putting on the putting green next to the first tee, and Tiger comes, and then like it was like one person filled around the green, and then it was like 5-6, and I'm just like, holy, like I can't miss a putt. I actually can't miss a putt. There's just eyes on you, just eyes, and obviously they're there for Tiger, but I mean, when he's not doing anything, it was just me, JT, and Tiger, so it was like three people, and if they're not putting, they're looking at me, and I'm just like, I'm nearly crapping my pants. So it's different when that many people have eyes on you. You know, you have the crowd that looks at you and cheers you on, but when there's hundreds of people around one little putting green, then it's a bit different.
That's crazy. So Thursday, I mean, obvious question. I'm guessing you're pretty nervous at this point, playing on Thursday morning.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday helped me a lot, because just in the practice round, there was nearly more people right there with you, because they're there to watch all the players go through. But when the tournament comes around, it's like people want to watch Tiger, or people want to watch the Scotties and the best players in the world. So it was nearly smaller in a way compared to the practice rounds, which is strange, but I think that helped me a lot, because as soon as you step foot on Augusta, you're like, holy, there's so many people. Like, it's just it was absolutely crazy. I can't describe it to you. It's just, you just got to be there. It's just crazy.
So by Thursday, you're kind of getting into your role a little bit, and you're probably not as nervous as you were in the start of the week.
I was enjoying it. I was like, this is cool. First tee, you obviously know the first tee, it's just maybe like 8 meters wide, 10 meters wide, and then just people lined up And it's so cool. It's just so cool. And you just need a stripe one.
You just need to hit a good one. I'd have been taking people out. I'd have been shouting four constantly.
You know, I always think it's mad about the first tee. Like, how understated the announcement is, isn't it? They only say, like, four, please, now driving, Minwoo Lee. It's just, like, really quick, really short, and just understated, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's usually there's, like, the speech, and then... And then they clap, but then it's like four, please, and then now driving, and then people just kind of start clapping, and it's so cool. The crowds, you know, it's not that big of a loud clap, but it's just like good enough to be respected and be, come on, let's go. This is the first tee. Let's have a good one. And it's just cool. You need to, you're nervous on the first hit. First hole is not that easy. You need to hit a good drive and then a good iron shot, or else you miss it in the wrong spot. You're not making par or birdie. So it's pretty slopey too.
So fast forward your first two rounds and you make the cut. First off, that's an incredible achievement for a first timer. Mm-hmm. You must have been pretty buzzing at that point. You mentioned as so far you were having fun and that's all you were going for. At that point, does your goals change?
Okay. Rewind back. Funny story. I was playing. It was pretty tough. I didn't know what the cut was. I didn't know what the... Because there's no scoreboards out there that have cut line at four over or five over. It was just the leaders. So you have no clue what the goal is and you're just out there. And then silly me, I thought, you know, back in the days they had a 10-shot rule from the leader. So I was like, I don't know who was leading at the time, but I'm like, oh, I'm inside the 10-shot cut. So if you were 10 shots in between, well, 10 shots behind the leader, you're going to miss the cut, even if it's outside the top 55 or top 50.
So for example, if the leader was level par... And you're nine over, you're in. That wasn't rule.
Yeah. So they got rid of that in 2019, but
you didn't know.
I didn't know. And I was like, oh, I'm good. I'm good, man. Like, it's all good. So if I knew, I mean, I had to make one under from the last four holes, and I managed to do that. But I think if I knew that the cut was going to be four over, I was probably, I mean, I don't know, I would have been pretty nervous, but I was like, to my caddy, I was like, hey, I should be fine with the cut. And he said, I think five might get in, four is probably definitely getting in. So I was four over going up the last hole, and that's not an easy drive. I smoked my drive, best drive of the day, and then hit it to like 12 feet, and I was, you know, happy days. But I still didn't know until I signed my scorecard. And until day's end, because it was just creeping right there. So I think it was like tied 44th to 46th. So it was getting close.
Wow. So you're in, you kind of sneak in, but you deserve it. You obviously had two good rounds or, you know, you were right in there. I mentioned, then do your goals change? Do you start thinking, right, can I get up this leaderboard? Do you start thinking, where's my score in relation to Tiger? Is there any chance I can get out with Tiger? Like, does anything change then after that Friday evening?
Not really. We just knew it was going to be cold. So it was like normal 15, 20 degrees, maybe 20 degrees first 2 days. It was a bit rainy on the first few days. And then Saturday comes and it's literally like 4 or 5 degrees in the morning. So like you're shivering, you're like, you got this big puffer jacket on, and so different to the first 2 days. And you're just like, you're not even thinking about the score. You're just like, hit your shot as good as you can and then stay warm. It was so cold and different. And fast forward, I ended up shooting level par and the scoring average was 77 or something on that day. Wow. So I moved up from last after making the cut to 25 or 26th. So I moved up 20 spots just from shooting at level par, and I was in there warm after the round. I was having lunch, warm, watching TV, and people were just making bogeys, and you know, you feel for them because it was windy as well, and you're like, yeah, you know, you dealt with it, but it did get very tough.
And at that point, are you like looking out for where Tiger's score is?
Yeah. Yeah, Dad was on his phone. Oh, Dad was on my phone looking at the scoreboard, and he's like, oh, he was, I think I was 4 over and he was like 2-3 over with like 9 to play or something, and then ended up, I don't know, 7 over or something. But we were looking close and we're like, oh, it could be cool. I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to play with him. I'd be pretty nervous. But I also love, you know, love the crowd and love playing in front of people and having that sort of pressure. So I was like, whatever floats the boat, and I'll just try to play as good as I can.
That would have been mental. That would have been absolutely crazy. So final day, moving into Sunday, you say you were about 20th on the leaderboard, roughly.
Yeah, 25th, around 25th.
Again, I'm going to ask the question, does the goal change? Does anything change at that point?
Well, Scotty was, I don't know, so far ahead, so I wasn't really thinking about winning, but obviously you want to do the best you can. And my coach just said, you know, go out and have fun. Make, you know, start off really well, because the first 6 holes, if you're level par, I think it's a pretty good score. It's obviously, other than the second hole and the third hole, I mean, it's tough. You know, you got a 4-iron, 3-iron into 4, and then you got a driver and could be a 6-iron into the wind on 5, and then you got that 6th hole. So, I mean, just go out there and have fun. And I made eagle on 2, and I was, you know, off hot and running. So it was good.
What did you get for that, by the way? Don't you get a
Yeah, so they say crystals. They say you get crystals. So I'm not really sure. They're going to send it to my house. So when that comes, I'll show you. But I think it might be glasses. Kind of like, I saw it on Twitter somewhere, but I'm not sure what the real thing is. It's like just like a normal glass with eagle on it. And it has, I think, a Masters logo. So, I mean, not many people have that, so that'll be pretty cool.
That's quite cool. And then again, just like an admin thing, right? Does someone email you after and go, oh, by the way, congratulations, you got an eagle. Where do you want to be sent your prize?
No. So at the beginning of the week, you register, and they say, like, there's like a little, there's like a full page of, oh, if you have a trophy or have like a bonus item, where would you like it sent? So send it home.
Oh, that's clever. I'm glad I asked that question then. So you start unbelievable. You obviously went par, eagle, and then didn't you have a couple of pars, and then you just went on a ridiculous birdie run. You had four birdies to finish the front nine.
Yeah, so I made a 10-footer for par on 1, hit my 8-iron. I smoked this drive, by the way. Smoked it, I don't know, probably one of the longest of the week. And I have 8-iron into 2, which is not normal. You know, you have like a hybrid or a 4-iron into that. And I've got 8-iron, flushed it, hit it to like 3-4 feet, hold the putt, par on the next. And then 4, hit a really good shot, hit it to like 25 feet past the hole. But anywhere on that green on the right spot, you're doing good. And I made a really good par on, nearly hold my chip on 5, and then on 6, it was funny. I hit the biggest flub of my life, I reckon. Oh, not the biggest flub of my life, but
a flub on six,
and I'm like, please, they didn't get it on camera, but I said, please be the best flub of your life. I clubbed up a little bit, and we wanted to be aggressive, because if you go short of that hill, you're going all the way down, and I made double on the first hole.
Is this where the pin's back right?
Yeah, back right. So it's further back than the first day. The first day I hit a little right and made double bogey because I chipped it up, went down. So we learned our lesson and said, let's be aggressive. If you have a chip from the back of the green, it's not too bad. It's quite flat with a bit of downslope. And I flubbed it, hit it high off the face and hit it to 7 feet. And I'm like, yeah,
no,
good job.
But
I hit this and I'm like, be the best flub of your life. And it's just gone plonk straight next to the pin and went to 7 feet.
Oh, my God. So you knocked that in, you birdied 7, which doesn't... just a quick one before we get into that. What do you actually think the hardest hole in the golf course is?
11. For me?
Comfortably. Yeah,
11's just tough. I mean, I think it did play the toughest. You've got to hit this really good drive. Usually plays into the wind. And then you've got... I mean, I had 4-iron into the last day, and there's water left, obviously, of the hole. And then they changed the green compared to the last few years, they've made it a bit more severe going up to the green. So, I mean, I think I had two chips from on that side, and obviously you don't want to hit it too far because you're going to go in the water. So I've left it in the fairway still. Like, I didn't get to the green. So 11's got to be the toughest hole for me. But we can talk about 10's a weird hole. There's a little tunnel there that it's hard to hit your iron shot. 12 is one of the harder holes as well. It's weird. It goes from short to longer. So it goes further up the green, to the right. But because when there's a pin on the right, you're not aiming at the hole, you're aiming in the middle of the green.
Yeah.
So if you go straight 90 degrees from the hole and left, five paces left, you're off the green. So if you're already aiming at that spot. So you're already aiming kind of off the green nearly. And if you pull that, you're bouncing it into the downslope and into the hedges. So you just nearly got to hit a really good shot. You nearly got to play kind of short, and you know, you don't know where the wind's going. You just got to hit whenever the wind says what the wind's saying. So
it's why they say that hole's so good for a left-hander.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because if they pull it
right,
it's
going
to
go long.
Exactly. So, you know, the weak shot for a right-hander is short right. So, I mean, that's why I hit it in the water on the last day. A lot of people hit it in the water, obviously. You know, the tournament's kind of made right there, just because it's just a strange hole, it's not hard when you're on practice round and you're just hitting it up, but when the pressure's on, it's not an easy shot.
And you've got that crowd behind you on 12. I mean, they're not watching anything else, they are watching you. They're just there. Exactly. I don't even know how you hit the golf shot.
Yeah, it's, I mean, 25 people wide. I mean, it just goes all the way back. There's a grandstand there. But we got to talk about how lonely 11, 12, and 13 is. So you go from the first nine holes and 14 onwards with just massive crowds. But then you go to 11th tee on the left. There's no crowd on the left at all. No one really near the green because they're all on 12th tee.
Yeah.
12th tee, you hit the shot. Obviously, there's people behind you hitting or watching, and you hit it onto the green. And onto the green, there's literally no one. There's only the rules official and the camera crew. So there's like five people behind there. And you make a birdie, and I made a birdie on the Friday maybe, and the crowd, you know, it's a few second delay. It's just weird. And then 13th, literally no one's there on the tee box, and it's just a little lonely place. It kind of got me. It's probably something I need to work on or learn from it, because you go from such a high to like, where is everyone?
Yeah. See, they'd be the shots I'd be enjoying the most. I'd be like, thank God everyone's gone. Don't look at me. I love how you just explained that corner, because I think that's obviously it's amen corner. Everyone talks about 11, 12, 13, about how tough they are, etc. You've just finished nine, which, by the way, just a quick one. Ninth green just looks ridiculous. Like, I don't understand. It's like, is it three or four tiers going down?
It's three tiers. So it goes, the first like 4 meters is up. So you know, if you hit it on that, you're going down. There's like 5 meters of room maybe from that edge to the next slope, maybe 6, 7, and then goes back up. It's these slopes are pretty small but severe. Yeah. So they're all tilted like this, but there's just small tiers. I mean, you can putt easily off the green from anywhere. Middle of the green to a front pin or anywhere behind the pin. I mean, it's just... I think nine's my underrated hole. Nine's such a cool hole. You have to hit your good drive, and then you have like a little wedge in, but you've got to miss it on the right tier, or else it's just a tough hole. And I think I made birdie there twice out of the four times, so it was cool. You know, obviously the last round it was for the record, so it was a cool putt.
When you are 6 under through the foot. Through the first nine. By the way, how mad does that sound? You shot 6 under par for the front nine at Augusta National, not on a practice day in the middle of nowhere, yeah. on a Sunday, on the final day with the Sunday pins, you shot six under for the front nine. That's ridiculous.
Well, we've seen it firsthand at King's Barnes. He can go deep, deep.
He can go deep.
So that's, he's just taking that game.
But it's a little different from King's Barnes. Yeah.
With the crowds.
The greens were a tiny bit faster at Augusta, right? Okay. You're six under through nine. What? And again, I keep asking you this question. Does anything change at that point? Like, does your mindset change at that point?
You just got to keep yourself calm. This is a tip for everyone, obviously, but you got to control your breathing. It's such a high. You're in such a high. It happened to me quick. I was in that moment and I was like, holy, I'm six under. Like, that's pretty good. But I know there's a lot of golf left. And obviously it bit me in the butt, those 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. 13, but you've just got to calm yourself down because it's such a tough course. That back nine can get you. So nothing changes, but you just got to hit your shots. Every shot's committed. Every shot's, you know, calm down. Let's hit a good shot on to the next. Cause I had a sense of sympathy for the guys that kind of have gone backwards, on 12 and 13 and 10, 11, because you're just out there and you just feel vulnerable because there's no one there. You're just by yourself with your caddy and you're just out there and you just want to cry. I literally wanted to cry after the 13th. I'm like, what the heck is this? Like, I just made four bogeys in a row. But then you're like, oh, you're actually two under. That's actually not too bad of a round. You're still going well. You would have taken it at the beginning of the week. Let's finish off strong.
Yeah, you got to reset a little bit. Did you notice as well after that night, was there like, were you starting to, I know there's not many leaderboards around, but obviously you got into top five then, didn't you, on the leaderboard?
Yeah. I didn't see that. I only noticed afterwards, maybe on the TV or someone has told me, but a lot of people have actually was watching coverage and I was up on the TV. So that's how I found out, but there's not many leaderboards out there. There's not many leaderboards out there. There's one on eight. And at the bottom, the people that are trending, so you obviously have Scotty, McIlroy, you know, the top guys, maybe the top five. And then there's probably 10 names that could fit on the leaderboard. There's probably five or six people. And then at the bottom, there was like three trending players. So it was me and a couple other players. So you can kind of see your scoreboard, but you don't know if you're coming top five or top 10. So you don't even know what the cut line is, so you just go out and play.
That's where you start getting your phone out and checking the leaderboard.
Checking my yardage book. Yeah.
You could easily do it on the 13th tee where no one's watching. You'd be like, I'm just having a quick look at the leaderboard, see where I look to. Did you notice any more like TV cameras starting to follow you around at that point? Was it like, did you feel like there was more crowd or anything?
No,
at that point?
Obviously, if you're a golf fan, you obviously know the Masters app shows literally every shot on that scorecard, if you guys didn't know that. So every shot was filmed by someone. So there's some people that are on the middle of the fairway and there's some people that are just behind you all the time. Obviously, there's a couple people per hole, mm-hmm. but they all go behind the first person you play with and then second person and then third. So, it wasn't different at all. I just went out and had to play.
You mentioned a minute ago, we love the Masters app. It's ridiculous how good it is.
Yeah.
And I know for full well, if I was on the Masters app and I just played in the Masters, I would have watched every single shot, every single day for the next week. Please tell me you've done something like that.
It was good reinforcement. You know, obviously you have good feedback, making birdies. I noticed what my coach was saying about my swing. You know, I hit a lot of punch shots and I don't hit a lot of full shots. But at the time, you know, you're hitting shots and you're like, nah, you're talking smack. So then you go out on the app and you, oh my God, I've literally hit punch shots on every shot. And I'm like, that's something I need to learn. And I wish that was like that on every tournament, but obviously, it's a money thing and, you know, it's probably expensive to have cameras on literally every hole, but no, it's special. I mean, it's a very cool app. It's the best golf app you know, golf tournament that has that, you know, that feature.
Do you reckon you've watched every single shot of your tournament?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. When I was in the physio. Of the Masters. Yeah. When I had time off, so I went to the physio, I was getting treatment. I would, I had my boots on for the recovery, and I just was looking at it. You know, it's fun to obviously watch. There's no commentary, but which would have been cool. But yeah, it was just, you know, just your shot, which was really cool. You know, you can use it for many reasons, but it's just special. It's just awesome for people back home, especially in Australia, because they've, you know, it's 2-3 a.m. when we are playing, so they can just watch it when they wake up.
Yeah. Give me your favorite hole on the golf course, then. We've talked about toughest. What's your absolute favorite hole?
Oh, man, every hole is so cool. Every hole is so special. Every hole has its special thing about it.
If you had to pick one hole.
There's so many good holes out there.
Say to you, Min, right, to get an entry next year, you can come back to get entry for next year. You can only play one hole. What's it going to be?
Go. Oh my God. Maybe, I don't know.
Too hard.
Two's pretty cool. There's probably like five holes I can say that are like awesome, real, like the top, but every hole has its trick to it, and I really love every hole, and
when I went in 2018, it was, I had to sit, I love the 16th.
Yeah.
The part, the 16th. Yeah. I just, visually.
That hole, I went for it on the last day, but all the other days it was too into the wind, so it just seemed, and it's a freaking tough wedge shot. That is probably one of the biggest slopes you're hitting a shot on. It's like this, and you're hitting a wedge shot. And I hit one wedge shot, and I literally thought it came out like a stinger. And I'm like, I hit that out of the middle. Like, that's a joke. Like,
what do you mean you don't realize
you're on that slope.
On the par three, though, the 16th.
Oh, wait, sorry. 15. I was talking about 15. Sorry.
15. No,
16 is very cool. 16 is very cool.
Yeah. Do you mean the slope on the approach to 15?
Yeah, 15 wedge shot. So 100 in, 150 in. That's got to be one of the hardest shots on the course.
Did any day you go for it in two?
Yeah, the last day, I hit a 5-iron in, smoked my drive, hit it, and then it had 5-iron in. And I 3-putted. So that's probably what I'm a bit biased about. That's not my favorite hole on 15, but 16 is very cool. There's so many people watching, and you got to hit a good shot, or you have this funky ass putt that you have to go, you know, up the hill or down the hill, which I had on the last day, and I 3-putted because it was, you literally couldn't stop it on the right side. I was on the right to that back middle left pin.
Yeah.
And you can't stop it. You literally have to nearly hit the crowd and let it come back down. Oh, it's that, God. It was that severe to me.
It's crazy.
Obviously, you said that before you went, you had the practice round with the caddy. Was he called Brian, did you say?
Brian.
And then you've obviously, you know, you've had some advice off people. You've now played. You've done an amazing, you tied 14. You finished, you've had an amazing week. Do you feel even after that one tournament, you've now got so much more in the locker for like next time? You've learnt a lot more. What was the kind of key things that you found from actually being there?
I mean, just obviously getting to know your surroundings, but also just, you just need to know where to miss it at Augusta. You cannot, it's so easy to make bogeys because you hit it in the wrong spot. And I mean, it's a real tough up and down, you know, it's big slopes and the greens get so fast but that's probably the main thing I got from this year and the practice rounds I had earlier in the, just before the tournament and prior to the tournament. So, for a player, that's probably the biggest key. And obviously there's going to be heaps amount of people still there, every year. So that's something that you can always look forward to. But just the course is so awesome. You just got to, it's pretty generous off the tee, I think. There's some holes that are tight, but second shots, you just need to be good with your second shots.
Do you think it suits your game?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I, I mean, before the round, before the tournament, you're going to say you're going to, you know, hopefully play well. But I honestly felt really good that week. You just got to shape it a lot off the tee, which I really like. You know, the straight holes sometimes get me because obviously the straight shot's the harder one. But like 10, I mean, you can draw it as much as you can. And, you know, the fairway's actually 80 meters wide because you start it out right and you turn it or you keep it straight. It's actually not too bad. And if you kind of hook it, like toe hook it, you're actually not too bad as well. So there's some holes out there that is just so fun. It demands a fade or a draw, which yeah. I really enjoyed. So and then it was my best putting stats of the year. Oh no, of my whole life probably at the Masters this year. So
wow,
that was really cool. Yeah,
that must fill you with a lot of confidence. Mm. So
yeah.
as the week's coming to an end and you've wrapped it up and you've tied 14th and as much as you probably didn't have any expectation levels, that's got to have surpassed any level of expectation you'd like to think. When you leave in Augusta, are you looking back and going, I can win there?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Scotty played unbelievable golf, but other than him, you know, I don't think I was that far off. So it's you got to play there a couple times and, you know, really, really get in your head that this hole you could par all four rounds and you're making one or two shots on the field. So I think next time I get there, I will, you know, keep the birdies. I think I was top five in birdies or something. So that was cool. And then just, you know, minimize the bogeys and then the one double. And, you know, you could be high up there.
That's pretty impressive to play the full week and have one double bogey. I mean, that's ridiculous. Unbelievable. Min, thank you for sharing that story with us. It was so good. I'd almost semi want to ask you about every single shot and every situation, but I'd get maybe a bit too geeky, maybe over a couple of beers when we meet up again in person. I'm guessing you're obviously playing in the Open St Andrews.
Yeah.
You'll be defending
Scottish.
That's the week before, isn't it?
Yeah,
you're still
the current champion, aren't you?
Yeah.
Is it only last year?
Yeah. Wow, that's pretty cool.
So you're obviously defending champion for the Scottish Open. You're then moving into the Open. Excited for that kind of build-up, moving into more links golf, moving into kind of, obviously, that'll be the final major of the year. And 150th at St Andrews. That's going to be pretty special.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be special, obviously, to defend. I haven't been able to defend my first tournament that I won in Vic Open just because I had stuff going on and COVID kind of pushed it back. I'm just excited to defend. You know, the course obviously suits me and I feel like I'm a lot better player than last year, which is good. And hopefully play well, you know, hopefully get a good group out there. You know, some of the top names are out there and obviously St. Andrews, it's going to be special. I played there a few times and, you know, we got to do that special video.
Played it in reverse.
You know, I played it in reverse, so I should know the course. it's an awesome 2 weeks. I think my family's going to come out and support and, yeah, it's going to be
Well, if you ever need an icebreaker with Tiger... You do know the story. It's the that he desperately wants to play. So if you ever rub your shoulders, just kind of nudge him and go, by the way, I've played the old course in reverse.
Yeah. Well, I think it's
actually a funny story about Tiger. I was on the putting green, like I said before, and he was there. And, you know, I'm a pretty confident person. I just went up to him and he wasn't looking and I went up to him and I said, hey, Tiger. And then he looks at me. Hey buddy, and just walks off. I had a lesson off him at Sage Valley, like 15 minutes away from Augusta, like 5-6 years ago. I was going to ask him about that, but his manager was giving me the death stare, so I didn't. Bother asking.
You've not told us about the story. you've had a lesson off Tiger.
Yeah, I mean, this was like as a junior Sage Valley tournament, and a special guest, Nike guest, comes along and. First year, Tiger came, and after the first round, he was hitting balls next to us, and he stopped hitting balls, and I was hitting balls, and Noda Begay and him were there, and he literally came right behind me, and he was like, "Oh, what are you working on?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm just hitting shots," and he's like, let's shape some shots, you know, don't overdraw it, don't overfade it, let's just hit some shots. And there's photos out there with, you know, he was literally like right next to my face and we're pointing at something, and yeah, it's pretty cool. I always share that. If people forget, you know, I share that.
Oh, that's outrageous. So yeah, I think dude, it's safe to say that you're going to have a huge fan base at the Open at the Scottish. Obviously, you had a really hardcore fan base before, but the amount of comments, we have a Facebook group for
people,
this podcast.
People love you.
And when you were obviously killing it at the Masters, the amount of people, because a lot of them obviously watched the video with Rick, they watched the Break 75 at King's Barnes, the podcast with yourself, and you've got a lot of hardcore fans from this podcast now. So I think you'll see a lot of those guys at the Open, which will be great.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was actually crazy. Every tournament after our video, I saw you on the Rick Shields podcast and the video. Like that was. I mean, it's just sick. It's cool. Obviously, you guys got a big fan base, and I've just you know, it's cool to, you know, just from a video, like people coming out and watching me, and so that's a really cool achievement for you guys. And obviously it's great to share stories that I don't get to share to the public. So I hope they enjoyed this one, and hopefully more stories come along.
Definitely. And I said to you, we should have signed him 7.5% commission on everything he does since the video. We'd be retired by now.
Yeah.
I'm like a proud parent seeing you do so well, and it's awesome. And I can't wait to see you again. Let's meet up either at the Scottish Open or the Open.
Yes.
Good luck with everything. Thank you for sharing your stories. Yep. If you don't follow Minwoo already, check him out on Instagram. He's awesome on Instagram as well. Thank you for that, pal.
Yeah, legend.
Yeah, that was class. I'm going to listen back to that even myself many more times. Catch you soon,
yeah,
buddy.
No,
enjoy a bit of time off with the family and the missus, yes. And we'll catch up soon, mate.
Cheers, mate.
Yes, will do. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
So that was absolutely awesome.
Amazing. What a guy. What a guy.
I genuinely, right now, I think he's going to win a major.
I would love him to. The game he's got, what we saw firsthand at King's Barnes that time, and obviously what he's done in majors now... has to. I'd love him to.
What I feel quite confident with, and we said it after the podcast, after we played with him last time, he is honestly the best ball striker I've seen still in person.
He's the 100%. In 100%. Person. Yeah, he's the best golfer ever. I didn't play, but been around. Outrageous.
And we've been around a lot of very, 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 very good players, but he seems to just hit it differently.
And he can go deep. He can go super deep, which he's proved, obviously, that they said that 9 holes.
Ridiculous. So, yeah. Hopefully, we're getting back on again around summertime. Thanks for listening, everybody. We shall see you next week.
Yeah.
It's nice to have you back.
Thank you. Quick rating on Apple if you want to. 5 stars would be great. Or like the video on YouTube, whichever.
See you soon.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.